This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Okay, Hiring Learning. I have a treat for you. A very, very accomplished sister joins us today. Former mayor of Baltimore, current executive director of the National Basketball Players Association Foundation. Wow. The NBA. Catch the fever. The midseason tournament is every Tuesday and Fridays. I feel like I'm doing an NBA commercial. I love the midseason tournament. The in-season tournament, should I say. Stephanie Rawlins-Blake joins us today on Higher Learning. Stephanie, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you feeling about the mid-season tournament?
I don't understand it. Okay. And so here's the thing. I asked
you how you felt about it. I didn't ask if you understood it.
Well, that's important though. It's important. Okay. I'm feeling good about it because it's basketball, but I am wondering why, you know, but it's fun. What I'm looking
you
for
like
more than anything,
basketball.
I'll tell you what I'm looking for. I'm looking forward to another reason to go to Vegas. That's what I'm talking about. I can't wait. Vegas, the 60.
I love Vegas.
Love Vegas. Go down there.
You guys do? I do. I'm like, I got to be in and out of Vegas.
Nah, man. I can't wait to. The in-season tournament, the NBA basketball tournament in Vegas is going to be the worst display of humanity you can possibly see. All the IG people are coming out. Everybody's going to be there. Me and Kalika will be there. I want to talk.
I don't understand. I'm sorry. You have a whole agenda. I'm trying to figure out what's the problem with Vegas, but I'll let you do your interview. Sorry to take you off.
No, there's no problem with Vegas. I want to know. What is your issue with Vegas?
No, it's just a lot for me. I feel like the older I get, the more I'm like, I just want to get in, take care of business, and go. There's nothing for me to enjoy unless I'm going for a specific reason, like Usher. Then that's great. I was just there for 72 hours for BravoCon. I was ready to go. It was too much. Vegas takes a toll on me. And I didn't even appreciate it. I was just working there the whole time. I don't know. It's a very transactional thing with me in Vegas right now. I get in business and I got to get out. I don't know. Help me. Maybe I need to go to the in-season tournament. Maybe that would bring back my love for
Vegas. You should
have
a holiday party.
Nah, I do love a good party, Stephanie.
Ooh, there's an NBA holiday party there.
A good party.
Foundation, NBA PA Foundation holiday party. Yeah, we're celebrating. We're about four or five players in their philanthropy. We are the foundation, before I came on, really didn't have a fundraising strategy. They had existed off of the fines, and Draymond can only do what he can do. So I figured we needed to put together a real, that was a joke, just for the record.
No.
put together a real fundraising strategy. So we had our inaugural golf tournament during Summer League, and we're doing a holiday party. I'm super, super excited about being able to showcase the players and what they're doing.
For someone that had and has such a background in politics, like the highest level of politics, like mayor of a major American city, what made you want to work with the NBA?
It's interesting. I didn't think I did at first. I was approached a year before I actually took the position, and I didn't see the connection. And the crazy thing is, I was invited to the film fest, Tribeca Film Festival, for the showing of Game Change Game. And I still get goosebumps when I talk about it, because I was sitting there in the cinema watching the players, literally knowing that they impacted the last presidential election, knowing that, you know, I think we can agree without having to see like official research that people, young people aren't checking for politicians to be their North Star. They're not checking for religious leaders. Who are they listening to? And it's players. And these players want to have an impact. They want to change the world for the better. And I'm thinking, like, literally, that's what I did. Like, you know, there's one thing to protest, but if you're trying to get laws passed, you know, I think those are the skills that I possess. You know, having spent over 20 years in elected office, getting significant things done, fighting for police reform and accountability, like the things that they care about. And I sat there and I was like, that's the connection. The reason why I was involved in politics was because of my love of service and wanting to use my skills and talents to make my community better. And I was just, it hit me like a boom, like this is a opportunity to do this literally on a global scale.
Mm. Yeah, I'm always interested when people make that a transition like that, because you said you spent decades in public policy and then to make that transition to, you know, with the foundation and basketball, was that difficult for you to be able to do that? And like, what advice would you give someone who maybe is saying, hey, I've dedicated my life to this. This has defined me for such a long time, but I want to switch to this because I'm also equally, if not more, passionate about the work that this thing is doing.
So I am loath to correct you, but to disagree.
Okay.
It is what I did. It did not define me.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I was very, very clear about that. I was a person who was blessed to be able to work in elected office in something that I felt called to do. But the reason why I feel like I've prospered on the other side of elected office is because that is what I did. That is not who I was. That is an important distinction for me. But I will say on the other side of it, for people who are looking to do something different, you have to really open your eyes to new possibilities. And just like I did, because initially I didn't, but you know, it is when I opened my eyes in sincerity to what was possible, with, you know, the transferability, if that's a word, of my skills, I was able to see it. And I'm very, very grateful for this opportunity to do good in a new arena. I mean, when I think about what I saw as mayor and how not just professional athletes, but people who were very active in philanthropy, a lot of people have good intentions, right? Oh, I want to put a community center here. I want to do this here. And more times than not, it is not informed by the people that they want to serve. It is not informed by a partnership with the people who are already on the ground doing that work. And because I know how inefficient that is, like that is what I'm talking to the players about. Yes, if you want to do a turkey drive, that's fine. But why don't you, let's figure out what's going on the ground. Let's figure out, like, talk to the mayor, talk to the city council people, see where it is actually needed. Fill a gap. You have to do more than just want to do good. I think if you are intentional about, being effective in that work, you have to dig a little deeper.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app. This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
You know, it's interesting. I'm very skeptical of leagues like the NFL and like the NBA and their ability to actually make structural change just because they're so deeply entrenched into corporate America, right? The players can go only so far. The players can only say so much because some things that they say that I think that Black people or specific groups would need might undercut the bottom line. The NFL, in my opinion, has tried and failed to reconcile some of the issues that the league has inside of itself and some of the social change they want to make outside of that. The NBA actually has a much more progressive front on these things, but I'm wondering how do these players or how are these players actually empowered to make actual systemic change when the fans of the league come from so many different, varying political, religious, and demographic places. Like, how can these guys actually talk about what they need to talk about?
I think part of it starts with understanding how to create systemic change and understanding where they want to make systemic change. So, for example, I talked about doing a turkey drive. It's about to be Thanksgiving. We know that that is a stopgap. That doesn't solve nutrition insecurity, food insecurity. So one of the first things that I started to do was talk to people in that space. I've been talking to the Milken Institute and some others in that space and trying to figure out, number one, how to inform players about the things that are going on in that work. So we're not just filling backpacks every year, but we're figuring out a way with the resources that are out there to end the cycle of food insecurity and nutrition insecurity. And out of the work that's going out of there, what can you lend your voice to? What can you lend your time and your talents to move these systems? So it's, you know, you can't do the systems change without laying the foundation. And that's the thing that I've been doing in my first year at the foundation, which is really digging deep into the work and figuring out how we can engage the players in this work. I'm doing the same thing with the American Cancer Society. It infuriates me that a Black man who was diagnosed with prostate cancer compared to a white man, it is the largest health disparity gap out of all of the cancers when a Black man is diagnosed with prostate cancer. And I'm sure you all know that it does not have to be. I've been asking them the question, how can players engage with them to underscore the importance of screening, especially since screening is so much easier for prostate cancer than it has been in the past? How can we be a voice to spread the importance of screening?
The WNBA players were equally, if not more vocal about using their platform, their positions to speak out against, you know, social change and as a form of protest of what was going on in the country as well. Will there be some type of work or collaboration with the WNBA as well, with the foundation, so they can continue to influence policy and social change?
Yep. I prior to this role, I served as an advisor. The WNBA PA had a as a board of advisors that helps be as a sounding board for that work. In this role, I welcome the opportunity to partner. And I'm looking for ways that we can do that. I talked about prostate cancer. Health is very, very important to me. I'm looking for, you know, maybe there's a possibility we can do work together around breast cancer, because even though it's the health disparity is not as wide, the gap is not as wide when it comes to Black women who are diagnosed with breast cancer, there still is a disparity. So, you know, I think that the sky is the limit. I'm looking forward to ways that we can deepen our collaboration.
What about protest? Protest is a very effective tool, particularly with guys who have this type of platform. The NBA is exists in an interesting spot. Like, it's a league that is very supportive of vocally supportive of a lot of things with great coaches that talk about things. Greg Popovich, Steve Kerr. That are really very vocal. But it is a lead that different forms of protests, and it's a very player-driven league. Sometimes it doesn't seem as open to players protesting and using their voice as I would like it to be, or as others would like it to be. You were mayor when your city was gripped by a lot of protests surrounding the death of Freddie Gray. What did you learn about people's need and ability to protest and the freedom that they need to protest from that situation that helps you deal with players, particularly young players, that might want to be outspoken and say different things?
Right. So if you recall, during that time, I really took heat for protecting citizens and any protesters. You know, I was very focused on making sure that that they were able to have a place and a space to peacefully protest. That was important to me, and I still take heat to this day for it. You know, people say that, you know, I gave them space to destroy the city. I'm like, no, I was trying to protect people's First Amendment rights. Some people, and we've seen this, you know, subsequent to that. We've seen this time and time again, where people who mean no good for the community come in and take advantage of a bad situation and create damage in communities. But that's different than, you know, the speech that I was trying to protect. So with respect to their freedom, I will always protect it in any way that I can. But with respect to the protest, what I learned in that, and it's something that I knew, but something that was, it was born out, and it was really it was really evidenced by the, you know, what happened subsequently is after the protests, like after the signs come down, after you going on to care about something else, the work has to continue to be done. Protests are important and effective at shining a light. Protests in and of themselves don't system change. You know, I think what I continue to be encouraged by is so many young people who are taking up the opportunity to run for office, to serve, to be a part of the change, to join community organizations, to join school boards, because, yeah, protesting is important. Shining a light is important, but you have to get people who are ready, willing, and able to do the actual work on the ground, having these crucial conversations, trying to figure out, you know, how the laws need to be changed and why. You know, that's to me, that's what is often overlooked when people, you know, want to pat each other on the back because they showed up in a t-shirt and a sign. What did you do after that? What time and talent did you commit after that when nobody was looking? You know, when CNN was gone, did you go to the meeting? Did you, you know, sit down with your representatives? Did you sit down with your community members and think about how you wanted to show up for your community, how your community wants to show up in partnership with your government. Did you do those things? And, you know, part of the reason why I like this role is because I'm able to emphasize the importance of the ongoing work. We can't wait until another tragedy to do the work that they want to see.
I love that you were inspired by Game Change Game, and that's one of the reasons that you wanted to be to work with or take on this role with the foundation. A lot of people, a lot of fans, there's a lot of criticism around 2020 and what the players did, and from fans who didn't want to see politics or activism in sports, even though there's a long history of that. Well, with the 2024 elections coming up, and this might not even be something that the foundation does, but will there be something that the foundation does with the NBA players in the community, whether it's voter registration, whether it's education on policies, or is that something that, because there is the fan base doesn't necessarily love to see that, that they'll stay away from?
I'm hoping that the players want to get as involved as they were in the last presidential election. We're working with, we have partners on voter education, voter registration, player registration, all of those things. But it's really, you know, we can give the information. You know, my goal is to help them understand how valuable their voices are in this space, so they will want to engage at the same level. Because, you know, since 2020, the level of engagement has, it hasn't reached that level again. And, you know, my goal is to get us to that level.
By the way,
and maintain it.
I just want to say something real quick. When you look at the agenda of the foundation, areas like childhood nutrition, disaster relief, mental health, social justice, youth sports, those are things that these players definitely have the power and the cachet to affect. Like an unbelievable list of things right there. And they can definitely touch directly on them. So I think it's also important that the goals there are within reach to like what the guys in the NBA can do. You know what I mean? Because if they were to say like, oh, geopolitics, I'd have been like, whoa, pump the brakes.
Well, I'll say this. You know, we have players at almost like over 25% of the players international, right? So you talk about geopolitics. Now, I won't say geopolitics, but environmental issues. Players are very strong and interesting. You know, when during the whole draft process, Wemby's mother came up to me and asked, because I had mentioned that we're doing some work around water infrastructure on the continent. With some of the players that, you know, that's their thing. And she said, you know, that was something that they were interested in. You know, these players have a reach. So it's just about how, I'm a big believer in, coalescing around issues. We do this matching grant program, 25,000 match, right? So they give 25, we give 25. You know, I've been talking to some of the players that are from the South. Do you think you would be interested in coming together and putting, you know, layering all of these matching grants together to do something big? You know, how can we do more with the resources that we have to have a larger impact? So those are the types of things that I'm exploring.
Wimby's mom, she was tall. How tall was she?
Tall, very, very tall, very poised. Incredibly poised. I was very impressed with their family. You could tell that they have a very close family and they raised him with some common sense.
His whole family of getting stuff off the top shelf.
I know, right? So, yes. I could definitely use that.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles. Because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart.
When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
This is actually an amazing thing. You became the first and only Black woman that was elected to serve as the president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, an incredible achievement. There have been a lot of Black mayors recently elected in prominent cities across the country. It's a good deal. There's also been some criticism of those Black mayors and their pro-policing stance. The question I have for you is that, is it possible that there is a disconnect between the actual electorate of Black people that vote in these elections and some of the voices in activism and protest and intelligentsia that are trying to envision a different view of policing? Being a mayor of a city where you have to work with police, like...
We almost made it through this podcast without me having to say something controversial.
Well, I'm asking because me and Rachel talk about this a lot, my disenchantment, you know, with the Democrats. I'm a liberal, but it seems as if what Black voters want and what the outcry that you hear from activism and activists and it doesn't always seem to match up. Am I reading that right or no?
Okay, I'm like, you want me? This is my honest, not speaking as the executive director of the foundation, but speaking as someone who has been in that space.
Right.
There are a lot of disconnects.
Okay.
I think one of the largest misconceptions is that there's a singular Black voice when it comes to community policing. What I will say is I've never once been to a Black community that is besieged by violence, where grandmothers can't go to the corner store in safety, where they fear for the lives of their children and their grandchildren in a community every time that they go outside, from gun violence, not police violence, from community gun violence. Never, you know, as we say in Baltimore, never, not once did I hear them say that they wanted less police. Mm. What they said was we wanted better police, right? Totally different. And what the disconnect that I see is when you have people who are blessed to live in safe communities, to, you know, that they can go to the Target and the Harris Teeters and all of those things, right? They can do that, and while they're doing it, they care about the Black community, but they don't live in those situations. So when you hear those people who don't live in the heat talking about defund the police and, you know, we should end policing, the people who are impacted, that is never what I've heard. So when I was mayor, I was committed to better policing, reforming the police department, getting more community engagement with the people who committed to themselves to want to make the community safer. Like, to me, that is the work. This whole kind of nebulous, you know, we envision a world without the police. People that are living with crime, people that are burying their kids, they're not talking about that.
Is better policing possible?
Absolutely. But I think it happens when people are willing to have honest conversations all around. When I was mayor, I can't even tell you the number of times I had conversations with the police union, and this is before the death of Freddie Gray, about how their version of what, you know, their notions about policing are not going to last. Their ability to line up behind police officers, even when they have done wrong, that is going to end. I said, I can't tell you when it's going to end. I can tell you that it will end, and you're not going to have the credibility that you want to be able to do your job until you're willing to have that conversation. Now, you don't have to have it out in public, but y'all need to have it internally, because you can't think that a community is going to work with you when you refuse to acknowledge that there are some people among you who do not deserve to wear the uniform. Mm. So, you know, it's the police have to have those conversations. You know, let me just say, we know electeds need to have it, right? But police need to have it, and the community needs to have it as well. Mm. Because we need to figure out as a community what we're willing to do to, I'm not saying we ignore the history, because that's silly, but the history is what the history is. Uh-huh. If you say that we want better, we have to figure out what we're willing to do in partnership with the people who are hired to do it, to create better. And that's accountability on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Last question for me. What are some of the, I know you guys have worked with some partnerships, like the Disaster Relief Partnership. You teamed up with a company with that. And so what are some of the other...
Team Rubicon.
And what are some of the other initiatives that you guys are currently working on as a foundation?
So that was important to me as mayor. You know, within 24 hours of getting sworn in 2010, we had Snowmageddon. I dealt with floods, earthquakes, tornadoes, derechos. I didn't even know what a derecho was. You know,
I don't know what it is now. What is that?
Right? Yes. It's like it's somewhere between a hurricane and a tornado.
Oh, wow. My gosh!
And it's crazy. I mean, it blacked out a significant portion of the city. So what I'm saying is, I've been through it, right? I've had to deal with all different types of disasters, and I understood very clearly. The time to prepare isn't after you have an incident, it's before. So that's why the partnership with Team Rubicon was so important to me, because we are pre-positioning assets all across the country. So we know that no matter what other organizations locally players want to support when a disaster strikes, what we know is Team Rubicon, which is veteran-founded, veteran-led, where military veterans are using their skills and talents to help rebuild communities. We know that they've agreed to be first on the ground. And if our players want to be a part of those solution and help respond, you know, they facilitate that happening. And that was very important to me. And we're also trying to get a feeding partner, so we're able to show up in communities immediately with feeding partners as well. Those are just some of the partnerships around disaster relief that we're working on, that we have established and that we're working on.
At Stephanie Rawlings Blake, the executive director of the National Basketball Players Association Foundation, she has just guaranteed us that it's going up in Vegas. It's going up.
Does this tell you how old I am?
Yeah.
I'm raising the roof.
I mean, we can still raise it.
You know how to have a good time. Exactly. We can still raise it with you.
We can still raise it.
Listen, I believe in partying with a purpose. You know, I think the way that we maximize the impact of the players to be able to raise money for the things that they care about is to be able to put on world-class events. My golf tournament was amazing in July. We're looking forward to doing it again. You know, we think about what Jay-Z does with that one poker game and how many millions of dollars.
True.
You know what I mean?
It's true. Yeah, it's true.
You know.
Last thing I'll say is I'm a huge fan of The Wire. So I did a Wire rewatch podcast. And so I'm coming to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a Baltimore food tour.
Oh, you're going to have fun. We have great restaurants.
See what I'm saying? See? I want to
watch. I'm telling you, it's hard to be on a diet in Baltimore.
So my thing is, because... I'm looking because it's like they ate so many different things on a wire. They ate pit beef sandwiches.
I know where to go for that.
They ate crab. They lake trout carry out. You don't like the lake trout.
No. I love it. It's like New Orleans and gumbo. It's just like, that's the kind of fight. Crab cakes and lake trout it's like people like it different ways. You know what I mean? Okay. Like, it's like Memphis and barbecue. It's just like, whose is the best?
Right.
I can tell you one thing. You're not going to get a bad crab cake.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you, when I'm saying this, I'm exaggerating. But, you serve a bad crab cake in Baltimore, people want to burn your place down. So you know you're going to get a good crab cake. The food.
Gotcha.
That's what we're known for.
Me and Jamel Hill are going to go down there and we're going to do this. Because we did the podcast.
Oh, well, tell Jamil just to tell Sonny to text me and I'll give her my...
There you go.
Yeah, I'll give her my restaurant.
Baltimore food tour. That's Stephanie Rollins, Blake. Good work being done over there at the NBA. We hope to work with you guys more and talk more about what you guys have going on. Thank you for joining us on Higher Learning.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Wonderful to talk to you guys.